Hello, everybody. Welcome to Geek Tyrants Weekly Podcast. This is podcast number 54, and we just got over the long Thanksgiving weekend, and we're all still kind of recovering from that, which is why the podcast is late this week. But that's okay, because we're here now. We're here to talk about movies. We are going to go through the box office numbers. I'm going to talk about The Blind Side, because I actually went and saw it this weekend. We'll also discuss Ninja Assassin, which I've heard was a brilliant film. You'll get that review later. We also are going to talk about the fantastic Mr. Fox and an early review for Up in the Air. And from there, we will talk about other items of geek business.
I finished Assassin's Creed.
So we'll talk about games, Assassin's Creed.
Believe it or not, I watched all the episodes of The Prisoner except the last like 30 minutes.
Ben, have you been keeping on The Prisoner too?
I actually have not. We talked about it a couple weeks ago or whenever it was.
I'm pretty sure you promised you'd catch up.
I joined you guys for the last time. Yeah, you know what? I was really excited about this miniseries when they made the casting announcements and stuff.
It ends. Like, you find out.
Yeah, it's just over. But I was like super psyched about it, and I watched the first 3 episodes out of 6 total, I think, and I just stopped. I was like, I was so disinterested with what was going on, and I know we had talked about it briefly, and I'd only seen like half of the first one or something, and I was kind of intrigued at that point. And by the time I got through like the second and third episode, I was like, this is just a complete waste of my time. Like, I just couldn't go through it anymore. I couldn't follow up.
And there's Ben P's review.
I have yet to finish it, but if I didn't watch it back to back all the way through just while I was doing other things,
right,
it is the most frustrating show to watch, because they give you pretty much nothing all the way through.
You guys are really getting me excited to watch this show.
Worse than Lost, of like taking you to that
it
point?
It is worse than Lost, because Lost gives you at least hints or at least satisfying answers. This gives you answers that you just go, really? And then you go, okay, I guess that kind of makes sense. And then it kind of keeps twisting and twisting till it's just, you don't care about any of the characters. You don't care where this is going. You don't care what's real and what's not.
Yeah.
Because there's no stakes. There's you're not involved anymore. Because it's just,
they twist that wet rag dry, is what you're saying. Yeah. That's not an actual analogy, but it sounds apt, right?
Yeah. But I'm 30 minutes short. I'm like 2 feet from the finish line.
Do you have a desire to finish it, or is it like,
finish it. I'll let you guys know next week if the ending is good, but the way it's looking, it's going to be flat. Yeah. It's really going to be flat.
That's a shame. It's such a good
cast. The cast, the acting, the production value. There's no direction for the writing, but the writing with the dialogue and stuff is actually good. So, I mean, there's talented people here. They're just,
right. I just feel like the formula,
they're completely misdirected. You see this with some filmmakers where they kind of go really out there, and when it works, it is amazing. But when they miss, oh goodness, do they miss, right? So I think this is a big miss.
So you have it, folks. That is your review for The Prisoner. We will now move on to movies. Really quick, I'll take you through the top 10 for the week. The Twilight Saga New Moon got number 1, barely squeezing in with $42.8 million. The Blind Side came in at number 2 with $40.1 million. 2012, number 3.
Well, can we just say that The Blind Side, it's up.
It's up, yeah.
That's so rare for a wide-released film.
I'll explain probably why that happened this weekend.
Okay.
Okay.
Turkey was involved.
Yes, Turkey was involved. 2012, $17.6 million. Number 4, Old Dogs, $16.9.
Old Dogs, doesn't that seem like an SNL fake movie whenever you see it?
It
like,
looks so
like a trailer
bad.
Of
no,
it.
No, it's the sequel to Wild Hogs.
It is?
No.
No.
It's not.
You might
same
as well.
Director.
Same director.
Same director, similar
same
name.
Actors. You
and
know,
the same rhyme scheme.
Yeah.
Okay. A Christmas Carol came in at number 5 at $15.7 million. Number 6, Ninja Assassin, with $13.3 million. Number 7, Planet 51, with $10.2. Number 8, Precious, with $7 million.
Still bumming out audiences.
Still bumming out audiences worldwide. Number 9, The Fantastic Mr. Fox, $6.9. And number 10, The Road at $1.5 million.
Wow, that must have been at, like, two theaters.
It's in how many theaters?
It's in 111 theaters, so...
I was pretty close.
But it still made the top 10 and only being 111. Yeah. You know?
Kind of impressive.
Not bad.
It's pretty good.
Not bad, but if you look at the first two films, Twilight, The New Moon, and The Blind Side, that's where most of the people went.
It's got 1/6 of Precious, yet it's doing a much better per screen average.
Yes.
Actually, it has the best per screen average among the top 10.
Nice. Yes.
Bam. So, look at that.
Looking
at the numbers and putting a nice little spin on it.
So, do you want to talk about The Blind Side first?
Yeah, I'll talk about The Blind Side.
Now,
this is a film that we all kind of...
ridiculed, make fun of.
Right. You know, I'm not a big Sandra Bullock fan. The movie just looked sappy. You know, it looked like one of those, and I'm holding quotation marks, movies. Right. And I really had no desire to see it, but of course it was Thanksgiving. Families were hanging out, and The Blind Side was one of those films that the whole family could go see, so we went and saw it, and I really liked it. I enjoyed the movie.
You think it's a lot of middle America, like real football states, that really went to go out and rally this movie?
Maybe. I mean, anybody that likes football, this is a movie for the football fans out there. So I'd say, yeah, there's a lot of people that went and saw the movie based on the fact that it deals with football. But Sandra Bullock is probably the best role of her career in this movie.
Wow.
I mean,
last thing I
was never a big fan of her in the first place.
Yeah.
That being said, yes, this was the best role.
But she's so congeal.
I mean, saying that it's her best role, she hasn't, if you look at her career, like, she hasn't really been in that many, like great. I mean, she's been in some good movies,
Premonition,
like,
was amazing.
But her roles in those movies weren't exactly, like, standout. So, I mean, I guess congrats to her for actually, like, showing a little bit of dramatic flair. I mean, I don't know. I didn't see the movie, but from what it sounds like, she did a really good job.
Yeah, she did a fine job. The story was great. It's just a solid movie all around. It had a good story, good characters, dialogue. It's based on a true story. And so you see how this kid in Harlem is kind of taken under the wing of this wealthy woman.
Socialite
who tries to help him make it in the real world.
Is this another one of your charity cases?
How would it compare to something like Remember the Titans?
It falls right in the same line as those kind of films. Mm-hmm. So if you liked Remember the Titans, if you liked, I didn't really like the Gridiron Gang.
Right.
But I think it's definitely better than that one.
Too bad Bob Neek isn't here, because he even loves those awful sports movies. Like, yesterday he was watching Goal 2.
Wow.
So does this fall into the feel-good film of the season?
It's definitely a feel-good movie. And, I mean, the movie, being Thanksgiving, they open it for Thanksgiving. I mean, there's a whole scene in there that is Thanksgiving. So I think that they use that to entice, Thanksgiving crowd to go see a movie that has Thanksgiving in it.
Oh my gosh, they're having Thanksgiving dinner. We were just doing that. We were just having turkey, and now they're having turkey too. Hey, let's go throw the football like they're throwing the football.
Yep. So I recommend it. I recommend you check it out if you get a chance. If not, DVD is fine. You don't need to see it on the big screen. It's not, a movie that you have to see on the big screen. But it definitely was a good feel good.
So
holiday film.
How about all the dramatic? Because like for me, when I'd see trailers for it, I'd be like, I don't buy Tim McGraw first of all with that crazy hairpiece, and without his hat. Period. And
Tim McGraw's, he's in it. But he's not, like, front and center all the time. He's kind of, like, one of the side characters. Yeah. He plays Sandra Bullock's husband in it. And, I don't know, he did fine, whatever.
What about all the dramatic stuff? Because, like, I can get on board the sports stuff.
Yeah, the dramatic stuff was good. A lot of people, there are a lot of sniffles in the theater. You know, you get a lot of those people crying. Yeah, so it definitely hit the audience effectively and emotionally and dramatically. So all around, it was just a good, solid movie. So check it out.
Cool.
If you get a chance. Another film that we got to see over the weekend was Wes Anderson's new animated stop-motion film, The Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Had anyone read the book as a kid? No,
I did, but it's been so long since I read it. I just remember reading it.
Yeah. So that won't factor in.
Yeah, well, it didn't factor in. I mean, when I'm watching the movie, I kind of remembered bits and pieces of the book.
Now, when he went and did the production design, he actually went to the author's home.
Yes.
And modeled it after for Roald Dahl's house, that kind of look of it.
Now, I thought the film was one of Anderson's best.
It is really good.
Now, what is it most comparable to of Anderson's work?
It's not comparable to any of them.
It's honest. Well, yeah.
It's I mean, the
it
whole
has the fact flavor, that it's stop motion. So,
yeah,
it's stop motion, which changes things
it's
considerably.
It's got his style. It's got his characters.
His music choices.
But it's stop motion. And unfortunately, the stop motion is probably what killed it at the box office. It looked tacky. It looked, you know, poor quality. It looked... He went for a more vintage feel on this one. But I don't think that
paid off.
That paid off for like the movie
audiences.
For general audiences in the long run.
I just know that I was watching a review for Fantastic Mr. Fox on the Totally Rad Show, and he talked about how there's moments in it where they're kind of musical, where as opposed to these very polished stop motion films where they almost look CG at this point.
Yeah.
Because Coraline.
Coraline and Corpse Bride, they both look. I thought
they looked
yeah.
CG. That's how clean these guys are. But this was very rough, and it came from someone who doesn't have that kind of animation, probably the same experiences as the other directors of these films.
Yeah.
I mean, you have stuff where they're just kind of just jumping from one area to another, and it's completely like a cartoon and not like regular stop motion.
I could see the film... I can't see the film being made in CG. I don't think that would have been the right medium to do it in.
No.
I don't see it as a mix of live action and CG. I think that would have ruined the film even more. I can see it, though, as 2D, traditional animated, if they would have done it that.
Yeah.
Or the way they did it, which I thought was perfect for the story.
And there's another thing like they had talked about where there were close-ups in this of the puppets that probably you wouldn't have seen, that showed just kind of like how... Like, just you saw the fur, and it was moving, and every time they spoke, it just moved in, like, crazy ways.
Yeah,
that were not
motion.
Consistent.
Yeah.
And I think...
Because they use, like, real fur and stuff,
yeah.
right? Like,
yeah.
all the little props.
That stuff didn't bug me, though. It didn't bug me at all. I thought it added to...
For the first, like, 2 minutes...
The style.
You kind of get...
Yeah, you gotta get used
to
it.
But the second you're into it, you don't even think about it anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem with the trailer... Is that you? By the time you're gonna get used to it, the trailer's over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So just rewatch the trailer over and over and over again before you go to the movie, so you're right into it.
Test your might.
Yeah.
Did you go see it with your kids?
Yeah, I went and saw it with my kids.
How'd they enjoy it? Because I wouldn't.
They enjoyed it.
Okay.
They were quiet. They stared at the screen. They didn't ask to go to the bathroom.
Oh wow.
It was
that's huge.
It was and they really enjoyed it. And I asked them afterwards if they liked it, and they're like, yeah, I loved it. I thought it was just they thought it was a great film.
Pretty good. Well, because I'd never show Rushmore or Bottle Rocket to someone under 10 and think they're gonna enjoy it, but it still has all that. It's supposed to have that same Wes Anderson kind
yeah.
of comedic beats, but that so that plays well for kids,
yeah.
Okay.
I think the animation played a big part in how the kids reacted to the characters.
The characters are great.
The characters were fun.
They were great. And just the voice work of everyone.
Yeah, everyone did a great job.
Bill Murray has said that he feels Jason Schwartzman stole the show. How about you guys? What do you guys feel?
Yeah, hands down. He was awesome.
He did steal the show. I think that's just what the character...
The character,
that's
yeah,
what
his
the character,
character
does.
Was
that's,
really cool.
That's,
I liked his character a
but
lot.
But when you say that that's what the character wants,
yeah,
it wants to steal the show,
uh-huh.
So that's basically what does happen.
Yeah, exactly. So,
how much of the movie do you think was really kind of influenced by Wes Anderson's style as opposed to Roald Dahl's like original style? Like, how much do you think Wes Anderson kind of took liberties to kind of like integrate his style with the final product?
It's been a long time since I've looked at the book, but from what I recall, it seems like he did take a good amount of liberties to mm-hmm. kind of create his own little thing, his mm-hmm. own style. for this story, to tell the story. But one of the things that I liked most about it was the homemade quality that it had. You know, these guys put a lot of work into this movie.
So they did something a lot different, too, with this film. Usually voice actors are recording their parts separately in vocal booths. And in this one, Anderson actually took a microphone as if he was filming them on a real set, and he took them to these real locations. Did that at all play into the kind of chemistry,
like the naturalism of the voices?
Yeah, is that, or does it just feel like any other film?
I think so, because something with comedy is timing, and you have a lot of these moments where it is literally just a pause which gets something funny, or it's how quick someone will come in after, stuff like that. And usually those would be something where an engineer is deciding where to put those or give those things space, where you would actually have people overlapping and talking over each other and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I wouldn't really notice it, but I imagine just having the group of actors there together doing their lines would only help make it better. At the same time, I don't think I really noticed, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it does go a long way, because, I mean, there's scenes where with Bill Murray's and Clooney, and have they been on screen together before?
I don't think they have.
So, but here, they're, based on what you guys are saying, they're acting with each other, and it seems like they're old pals.
Yeah.
And that comes across in the characters very clearly.
It seemed like that you guys liked the movie enough. I'm sure you heard about the kind of controversy of Wes Anderson kind of directing it from a Harris hotel room, on location through video cameras and stuff. It sounds like none of that kind of came across in the final thing.
You know, when you're doing an animated film, I mean, I could see Tim Burton maybe having more of a hands-on thing with his stuff. But when you look at the way animated films are done, the director isn't really there doing it. They go through, they storyboard everything out, plan all the shots out, and then they send the character designs, they send the full-on storyboard script overseas, where they just go through and they just do it.
Mm-hmm.
The director is not even in the same country.
Right.
And
then broken down to different directors different sequences.
Exactly. And then those, you know, certain scenes, when they're finished, they get sent back to the director. The director goes through those, gives notes on them, emails back what they need to change, and that's how it's done with animation. So I don't know why there was such a big fuss over
it. Even for larger feature animation, it's slightly different. And then for stop motion, it is such a laborious and slow process that to have the director there all the time doesn't even make sense, because you'll have your entire days of work and you've got like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Of course that would make sense to...
Sure, Wes Anderson wasn't there, but this has Wes Anderson's stamp all over it. You know what I mean? He directed this film, even though he wasn't in the actual studio moving the figurines. So
as long as it has his kind of flavor to it and it turned out to be good, I don't think it's really an issue even.
At the same time, though, like I said, I think the movie's weak point to the general audience is the fact that the animation isn't CG.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's what's speaking to people right now. That's what everybody wants to see. And it kind of sucks, you know, because we're eventually going to lose all of this stop-motion stuff.
We'll see how it does next week, because it pretty much... I mean, it's in its third week, but it pretty much opened last week.
Yeah.
And if we see it go up, that means people don't care about the animation style.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Very cool. Moving on to Ninja Assassin. That's James McTeague.
Yes, please, tell us about Ninja Assassin.
It's the James McTeague-directed, Wachowski-produced film about ninjas.
Now, something I just realized, they did this action film for $40 million. That is a small budget for an action film. That's the same budget as Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Mazur and I saw this, and I think Mazur walked away liking it a lot more than I did. So I'll let Mazur kind of, for the positive people out there, talk first.
It's an over-the-top action film. It's basically a mental escape. It's a situation where you have broadly drawn characters doing very cliche things, and pretty much leads us to action sequence, to action sequence, to action sequence. Overall, the fighting was pretty cool. Was expecting some slightly different action style, but it came off pretty traditional. And there are some parts where you do feel the influence of Zack Snyder with the two-camera shooting process, where they have a high-speed camera and a regular-speed camera. And there were some parts where it was slightly distracting because they would push in from the high speed and then wide to the normal speed, and it felt kind of weird. But other than that, I did enjoy the film.
Why?
all that, but why? I was crossing my legs all sorts of ways, making angry noises at the screen during the film. I don't know if Mazer noticed, but I was all... I make little noises like that when I did something I disliked. I think...
Well, you coined something for this.
Plot hole assassin. Or slash inconsistent assassin. It was... And that's ultimately because I can... Don't get me wrong.
There's no defending how bad...
Yeah, there's no defending it.
Because some of the inconsistencies.
I'm all on board. Forget, you know, going, okay, there shouldn't be that much blood splurting out of a guy. But I'll accept that. Even though it's like neon red coming out of this dark shadow.
Yeah.
I'll accept that. I'm fine with no plot. But don't try to shove a plot down my throat that just doesn't work. It was bad. First of all, inconsistencies. The ninjas, I guess... their powers work on the hour every hour. I don't know how their powers work, because it's
maybe it's like, you know, in a video game where you have to, like, you can use your ability, but then you have to wait for it to recharge.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is,
because these guys can move like ghosts at 100 miles per hour in the shadows.
They can be flat shadows,
yeah,
and pull out.
They can be very mist like you know,
yeah.
They can be very mist like yet the second a light is shined on them, they can just be blown to smithereens. Yeah. The average dude can just take a gun and just wallop them. Also, one of the big things, and I like the idea of it, is that these ninjas have so much control over their bodies that they can actually stop blood from coming out of their veins and actually heal themselves.
That's kind of a cool concept.
Amazing, right? You see it, like, early on, a flashback when...
This is no spoiler.
Yeah, no spoiler. The sensei master guy, he cuts his palm. Well, first of all, he gives a big speech. A ninja is supposed to have a complete control over his body. And he cuts his deep gash into his palm, and no blood's coming out. And I like that fact. That he's done really well.
Everybody, please look at your palm right now.
Yeah, that's good.
To imagine
it. Yeah, imagine it. And then he closes his fist and then opens it up, like magic trick, healed perfectly.
Nope,
no scar.
No scar.
Yet, later on in the movie, the main character slashes him across the face. Scarred forever. His eyes all jacked up. It's like, if you can fix your hand, why not make, you know, get
and
rid of that?
We see other instances where there is a scar.
There is a scar, yeah.
So, finer thing.
All right, that makes
but
sense.
It's not, it's not a major plot.
Yeah, yeah.
So what you're saying is they didn't take advantage of the cool healing factor
that
these ninjas
like
supposedly have.
Imagine a bunch, like 100 Wolverines coming after you. You're dead.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You can shoot them all you want. They can heal themselves, but just by doing some, you know, finger little exercises, and all of a sudden their body's all healed up.
I will say that their healing factor is slow.
It's very slow.
And they have to meditate.
Yeah.
So it's not like, I wouldn't say it's not like Wolverine.
So
if it was like Wolverine, that would be awesome.
That'd be awesome.
And they don't like jump in a pool of wax like in Wanted.
Yeah.
And then come out healed.
No.
Oh, okay.
I like that actually better. And
at least they took advantage of it.
Yeah. Another inconsistency is they train blindfolded, and they can hear little things coming. It's like they can hear the swoosh of a blade. Yet this girl, the main character girl from Europol. She sneaks up on two of the main villains, one with a screeching car. The ninja can hear, but he can't hear, and where he gets hit by it. And she sneaks up on the sensei with a gun, panting, and then all of a sudden shoots the guy with a gun.
Yeah.
That could be considered spoilers, but no, it's not really.
She doesn't even really do anything.
You can sense smell. And a big thing that Mazer and I talked about was, like, focuses on one clan, but they talk about and allude to all these other clans. And just that world
seems...
One interaction with another clan, it's lame.
Yeah.
Freaking lame.
And we don't understand why it even happened.
Yeah, because he runs away from his clan.
And his clan is hunting him.
His clan's hunting him, and he's killing his clan. If your enemy's enemy is your friend, why would you try to kill this guy?
Yeah, we don't even know if these are rival clans.
Yeah.
Or if they work together, like, they explain none of it.
No, it would have been amazing to see these other clans. But you don't. It focuses on this Europol thing. Also, apparently, the reason ninjas haven't come out in the media or anything like that is the fact that they have a lot of juice in, like, the government agencies. Like, the second anyone tries to investigate anything about ninjas, they get offed. They get assassinated by a ninja assassin. And so there's kind of two regular people who work at Europol. And the one guy is like, I kind of started looking into it. And, you know, he started being investigated. He's wanted. He wants to be killed by these other government agencies. They have enough juice to stop him from investigating, looking into things. Yet he assembles this task force that takes ninjas out.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, within, like, a couple minutes.
Which is, by the way, wasn't it, was it cool to see special forces versus ninjas?
I like that.
I'd like to see
both battles were one-sided. Like, one battle, ninjas were whooping ass.
I'd like to see this in a better film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these ninjas were great. And also,
ninjas versus pirates.
We were expecting this Europol guy, with how much he was able to assemble this force, hey, he should be part of another clan. Wouldn't that make sense? Wouldn't that be an awesome twist? But not in there. He's just a guy who just, I'm sorry, I'm being investigated. I can't help you. Oh, wait, yes, I can. Big task force.
How much do you think the movie was really kind of influenced by James McTeague or the writing? Like, what was the balance like there? Because, I mean, he directed V for Vendetta, I like that movie a lot.
I love V for Vendetta. The scope of V for Vendetta is 10 times the scope of Ninja Assassin. There's just so much... There's no fluidity in the storytelling or the action. Even, like, the kind of...
It feels cliche.
It all feels so tongue-in-cheek.
Very done before. Very tired.
All the kind of Zack Snyder shots aren't done nearly as fluid.
No.
There's so...
You see the influence, but it's the knockoff.
There's a scene that takes place on a freeway that looks... It's, like, on people's shoulders, you know? A lot of the action, it's, like, a guy throws a blade, cuts to a guy getting his limbs cut off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's no fluidity to it, and, like, it's just hard, and it doesn't have any weight to it at all.
That chase scene where ninjas are chasing the main guy through a freeway?
Yeah.
That looked cool. That did look cool.
I think it was too close.
It was a bit close.
Because remember, like in The Matrix, when the agents are running on cars, like, that was cool. They didn't do any of that. It's just them running on freeways, jumping over cars.
Yeah, that's true.
So all that's so blurry, and there's nothing I could take from the film besides the ideas of the film. There's nothing executed where I went, awesome. That was executed great, because it wasn't executed.
But I feel like the trailer prepared my expectations to be low enough for this film to just go, I'm just going to go with it.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. Well, also, a big thing for me is the fact that it's told in all these flashbacks, and the fact that they also never explain the main character. He's being tipped off to who's going to be assassinated, so he tries to stop these people. They never explain who's helping him.
Who's tipping.
Who's tipping him off. But all the flashbacks, you basically see him exercising and then flashback. It's not like he's in the middle of something and then flashback. If they told it...
It's like walking down the street, flashback.
That is literally what happened.
Oh, yeah, okay. Literally. That's literally happened. He's walking down the street, flashback. Literally happened. He hears like a little, like a car running over a board. He's all, that sounds like a heartbeat. Flashback. And so if they told it from him, because it's these kids who get kidnapped as babies or as toddlers, and they find runaways. And the big thing is, like, if they went from him as a kid, or if they kind of go in as a teenager, and like him kind of questioning all the training as he's a kid, and they kind of flashes back to that.
Like how they built up with like 300?
If it was just chronological, more linear, you'd be invested in all the things kind of happening.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but... He wants to direct a Superman film?
This gives us no faith in him directing.
He's been in talks with Warner Brothers. Nothing, as of right now, nothing has happened.
He has great ideas,
The movie
though.
Is not going to happen.
Yeah.
As of right now, there is no movement on Superman at all. But he is the director that Warner Brothers has been talking to recently about bringing it to life.
But we've seen such inconsistency in the ninja abilities. The thing with Superman, what makes him real is... You have to make...
He has a distinct set of rules.
He has a very distinct set of rules.
Lives by his own rules.
I am the law.
Yeah. It's like you can't sneak up on Superman. Superman does not trip. There's certain things that you don't see Superman do that I'd be afraid that he might...
Another big thing is the fact, just with the inconsistency in powers, these guys are killing machines. Like, the way they fight each other, like, that's pretty cool. Like, the way they fight each other is like this... kind of delicate ballet of just blades and everything like that. Yet, on his first mission, the main character, he can't take down this, like, overweight English dude. That was the most interesting fight scene, though.
Yeah.
Sadly,
But just imagine, he's fighting a guy who's basically, like, the Blob. He's stabbing him several times over and over again, and the guy just, like, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. If he faced more guys like that, or if there was, like, a clan of people who...
A clan of fat people.
No, a clan of guys who were impervious to pain, period. Because, you know, when these other guys are getting stabbed, they feel it. They retreat. But this guy was... Yeah, that was, like, the most brutal scene in the movie, and it was inconsistent with all the other fighting he does. Because he's barely kicking this guy. He's just going at him with basically a box cutter.
Well, I think I might just wait for DVD on this one. You guys aren't doing a very good job talking me into it.
That we're trying to talk you out of it. I'm trying to talk you out of it.
Are you trying to talk the audience out of it?
I don't recommend that movie at all.
There you go, folks.
And one of the biggest things, too, is the fact that Raizo, he doesn't want to kill people. He has to kill a lot of people not to kill people. So it kind of goes against the whole story. It's like he wants to not have to kill people, yet he's willing to kill all these people to not have to kill people.
Gotcha.
I thought it was more revenge.
I don't know. Is it kind of revenge?
I thought it was revenge.
I think he's running.
I don't think he's against killing people. He wants revenge.
So I don't recommend it. Mazer, do you give a recommend? DVD recommend?
Just yeah, get it on DVD.
Cool. Moving on, a little early review from Ben P for the George Clooney flick Up in the Air.
Yeah, so got a chance to see Jason Reitman's Up in the Air a couple weeks ago at the Paramount lot, which was really cool because they did a Q&A afterwards with Vera Farmiga and Anna Kendrick, the two lead actresses.
Yes. By the way,
yeah, totally.
more Vera, the girl from The Departed.
Right. Yes.
High five.
Yeah, all right, high five.
Let's mic that high five.
The movie has been getting massive, like, critical acclaim, like, tons of buzz about it, even some Oscar talk for Clooney and for the movie itself for Best Picture. I thought the movie was really good. I liked it a lot. I don't know if I would say maybe Best Picture, but, you know, now that the Academy is doing
10
nominations, yeah, I think it'll probably get a nomination. I don't think it'll win, but that doesn't have anything to do, and that doesn't have any bearing on how good the movie was. That said, the movie, to me, is like, it's this ode to the traveling man. Clooney plays a guy named Ryan Bingham, who fires people for other companies. Like, he gets brought on by other companies to travel across the country to their establishments and fire people in person because these people don't want to do it. So he practically lives in the air, lives on the plane, lives in hotels, barely spends any time at his house, and that's like, that's who this movie is kind of pitched towards, I guess, that kind of traveling audience of Americans who do that kind of stuff for a living, or people who are just constantly traveling all the time. And I think it would connect a lot more with people who have huge amounts of travel experience as opposed to those who have barely been on a plane or something.
Is it a lot of inside travel jokes?
There's some of that, yeah. And you know, Clooney is, like, really pleased with himself that he's in, like, the first class lines and stuff. Like, he gets to skip to the front of the line because he's got these cards that, nice. You know, because he travels so much. And, like, one of his goals early on in the movie is to become, like, the third person or fourth person to get 10 million miles traveling in the air or something. And, like, everybody's talking about what an accomplishment that would be and how he would be the youngest person to do it and all this stuff. So, I mean, there's all these themes. But, it's hard to describe this movie because... There's a lot of different themes and kind of through lines that run through it. Anna Kendrick plays, like, kind of a young, like, recent college grad that kind of invents this way to, and this isn't really a spoiler, it kind of, because it happens within the first, like, 30 minutes.
She dies in the film.
She kind of invents this way to fire people online, like, through Skype and stuff like that. Not really invents, but
yeah,
like, kind of, you know, like implements the system into the Clooney or the company that Clooney works for, and so it pretty much renders him obsolete. So he takes her under his wing and shows her how to, like, what he really does and, like, how. So there's this theme of relying on technology to do things that really should be kind of a personal experience, and that was a really interesting part of the movie to me. So there's that subplot, and then there's this thing where Vera Farmiga's character is essentially like a mirror version of Clooney, where she is like a traveling worker as well and kind of doesn't really have a home life and that kind of thing. And so they, like, hook up all over the country.
Nice.
Just like at random spots, and, like, they're very much compatible personalities and stuff. And slowly, you know, Clooney gives this whole speech. I don't know if you guys seen the trailer of it where he talks in that big speech about the backpack loading all of your relationships into your backpack, and that's the heaviest component of your life and stuff. He gives these kind of motivational speeches. Yeah, it was kind of cool actually. But you know, as the movie progresses, his kind of viewpoints on things change, and I'm not going to give anything away. I'll try to write up a review for it for the site. You know, early look, early recommendation. Yeah, definitely go see this movie. I'd recommend it to pretty much anybody, especially people who travel a lot. I think it would carry a lot more weight with them.
Is it more of a romantic comedy? Is it more of a travel film? More of a motivational kind of?
That's the thing. It's very.
Is it a slice into someone's life?
It's all of the above, which is bizarre. Like, you know, it's kind of hard to categorize this movie. Like, there are some very present romantic comedy, you know, cliches and kind of tropes to it, but the entire movie doesn't feel like a romantic comedy. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't classify it as that. That said, there's also a lot of just comedic moments, but it's hard to classify it as a comedy. And there's a lot of serious drama stuff, but it's a good mix of all of the above. I'd say it's more drama than anything else, but it's kind of like lightened here and there by comedy. I would say it's a lot closer to Thank You for Smoking than Juno or anything else that Reitman has kind of produced or done since then. But yeah, it was good. I liked it a lot. One other thing that I wanted to mention was that at the Q&A, Vera said something about her character that I really liked. She said her character was a feminine portrayal of masculine desire, which I thought was kind of a really kind of poignant look at, or description of what her, how she approached the character. And when you really kind of break that down, it essentially means, you know, kind of what I said before about her being like the mirror image of Clooney.
Yeah.
But I thought that was good. You know, it's kind of refreshing to hear actresses and actors kind of get into their own head a little bit and reveal some information about their process and how they kind of go, you know, where they go to find this character and that kind of thing. So I thought that was kind of cool.
So was it a big departure for Clooney? I mean,
Clooney was great.
Was Clooney Clooney?
Yeah, Clooney was Clooney, man.
That's my problem with people like Oscar buzz when he basically he's playing himself.
Yeah, it's the same stuff from him, but he, you know, he's in recent years especially, he with Oh Brother Where Art Thou and The Men Who Stare at Goats and like Burn After Reading, and so he's gotten a lot better as far as variation goes, I think, in his roles. Like, you know, it's not just the Ocean's 11 Clooney like over and over and over again.
He's not constantly readjusting his couplings.
Man, you know what? I said it was Clooney, but it's not. It's like his charisma comes through so heavily in those other movies, and a little bit of that is there in this movie, but he's very vulnerable in this movie. He's isolated, he's lonely, he's broken down a little bit, but it's not over the top like melodrama. It's not like a performance from like Precious or something. Like it's not overhyped or overdone. So it's a subtle difference, but I think he deserves at least a nomination of Best Actor, because he did a great job, and it's hard. I would imagine it would be hard for Clooney to kind of remove that natural charisma that he has from anything. Like, he just seems like that's the kind of guy he is all the time.
Yeah, you see that in The Man Who Stared at Goats, where he's a comedic character, but he comes out no matter what he does.
Yeah.
Now, one of the biggest things in travel, I used to spend 9 months out of the year traveling.
Oh, wow.
Does it kind of give a nice contrast of him at home and him while traveling? Because there's a bit of carefreeness. When you're on the road or you're traveling, you don't care as much about what you do. You can be a little bit more wild.
I think one of the lines early on in the movie is like, the reason I love traveling is the reason why you all hate it or something. And he like, it shows this really cool kind of like almost Batman inspired montage of him loading up, like packing at his house, loading up his stuff, like quick cuts, him zipping up his suitcase and like going through this, you know, like the old Joel Schumacher Batman movies where it would like zoom in on the belt clicking and like the zipping up of the gloves and stuff. It was kind of reminiscent of that, probably unintentionally. That's just a connection I'm drawing for no reason.
Did he have nipples on his suit?
On his suit, no. Oh, wow. Clooney played Batman. I didn't even realize that. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
In a Joel Schumacher.
Right, yeah, exactly. maybe that was kind of a throwback to that from Reitman. But yeah, it shows kind of brief glimpses of like, the apartment where he lives, and, like, everything is really bare, and there's nothing. It's obvious that he spends no time there, and he's very comfortable kind of on the road and in hotels and, like, and that lifestyle. And Anna Kendrick's character She was great, by the way. I don't know if you guys have seen Rocket Science. That was the movie that she kind of like broke out in. It was 2005, I think, where it's her and Reese Thompson as students that are doing debate stuff, and she's got this like rapid fire delivery and stuff. Some of that comes across in this movie too. So it's pretty obvious that Reitman wrote the character for her specifically.
Wow.
So after seeing her in that movie, so
she's fairly young too.
Yeah,
isn't she?
she's really young. Not really young, but early 20s.
The only thing I really know her from is Twilight, sadly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. That's good for her to be able to do, I guess, a big movie like that and then come to something a little bit smaller.
Something opposite Clooney. Like,
yeah.
How do these other actresses hold their weight?
Oh, they totally do. Like, especially Vera. Like, she is more than Clooney's equal in the process. They have this, like, kind of witty banter that goes back and forth. And they, like, at one point when they first meet, they kind of bust out all of their credit cards and like different travel cards, and they're like it's like they're like comparing battle scars almost.
Nice.
So they have a really good relationship through the film, and it's good to see her in more of a lead role as opposed to even something when she was in The Departed.
Sex with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Right, well, she was playing like ninth fiddle to all of the other characters in that movie.
Yeah.
So it's good to see kind of a condensed cast, and it really allows them to kind of step up. There's some good cameos in it too. Zach Galifianakis had a small role, J.K. Simmons had a small role, and Sam Elliott, who's always awesome, is like a cowboy in any movie. They use like Tombstone and all that stuff.
Could he not play a cowboy?
Almost played a cowboy in this one. He was an airline captain, so it was close. Like
he's an air cowboy.
Yeah, it had that little bit of a feel to it. But
so I finally finished Assassin's Creed. I love the first game. I'll just sum up real quick. The gameplay is every little gripe that you had in the first one completely fixed in this iteration of the game.
Really?
The graphics, I think, are pretty much the same, although the first one, they were amazing. There are some issues with character models being low res, but that's because the draw distance is unbelievably huge. When you get on top of a building and you do what they call a sink,
uh-huh,
and you basically see your part of the map.
I have no idea what you're talking about, by the way.
Is that like I played the first game. I haven't had a chance to play the second one. Is that like the eagle vision?
The eagle,
or whatever,
yeah,
in the
when
first,
you're up top
the,
and you're like,
right,
and you're like,
it
you
does
do that,
that 360.
That spin around, and you can see off into infinity, right? Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, free running, which was amazing the first game, is just as great in this next game.
Cool.
They do have add little extra bits where you're able to get a little higher and stuff like that. Now, before you had to do a lot of repetitive missions to accomplish anything. And this one, it's gone. And there is a little bit of it, but they have ways of giving subtle variations to things like that that just make it...
So you can do things in different ways as opposed
do
to like
in different ways.
To, like being
yeah.
forced to do things in the same way, just at like... Like, because in the first one, that was kind of a big problem that I had with it, was you would do something, jump on a horse, like, you would have to ride, you know, like, 10 miles to another city, and, like, there's
yeah.
no way to, like, really transfer yourself into that city, and then you would essentially do the exact
this
same thing
that
you've just done.
This one has a fast travel system. You just go to, a booth, and you spend, like, 100 gold, and you go to pretty much anywhere except within your own city.
Okay.
That works pretty well. I use that a lot. There's also a economy... Or where you start to build your own little city and you buy shops and you start to fix up your villa and you buy art and stuff like that, which is pretty cool.
It's like Sims.
Yeah, a little bit.
Or like
you're buying stuff for your house. You can't control where it goes or anything,
mm-hmm.
but you just see like you get into this town and it's completely shot and there's no one there. And then by the time you're done with it, you fix this entire town up and your mansion is just amazing. But it's such a it's like one of those little small parts of the game.
Right.
There's part of the game like before you had to there was pickpocketing missions
mm-hmm.
in the previous one. Now you're actually able to just pickpocket people for money.
Oh, cool.
If you want.
Yeah, cuz didn't they installed a or like added a thing where you have to buy kind of upgrades for
yeah,
shields
you
and
buy,
armor and stuff
you
like that.
You buy armor, you buy swords, you buy knives, medicine, all sorts of stuff.
Is that problematic?
It's a little bit at the beginning, but very quickly, if you just buy all the upgrades and stuff for your city, you're generating more money than you could ever spend.
Oh, okay, cool.
So it goes away pretty quickly. You also see that the character ages over a period of time. I think you're probably seeing him through maybe about 15 or so years. And the story is interesting enough to keep you wanting to find out what's happening next. The Animus is back. Kristen Bell is back.
Nice.
You find out what's going on there.
Is it Desmond still?
It's still Desmond. Everything that you play in Assassin, that everything starts to bleed into each other.
Okay.
So, it's.
Is there still like that that kind of duality where you have you're like in the present day like in the Animus, but you can't do anything like you know in the first game you could like walk around and kind of explore the lab, but you couldn't like jump or do anything.
This one you can do that, and in fact there's a point in it where you actually as Desmond are jumping around doing those kinds of things.
Yeah, I was hoping they would do something.
And you as Desmond use the Assassin Blade. So,
nice.
Sounds
like an upgrade all the way around then.
Yeah. Well, the way I'm looking at it, because with movies you kind of have the second and a sequel, and it's kind of like basically the same movie, but with just a little bit of variance.
Mm-hmm.
With video games, you're always getting a leap in technology, a leap in graphics and stuff. Assassin's Creed is a completely new IP, and they had no legacy to build on top of.
Mm-hmm.
You can see in 2 that you have all that you had in 1, but they added to it. And I'm sure in 3 it's going to have everything in 2, but they're going to add on top of it.
Right.
So as this keeps going, you're going to get a richer and richer experience. So I'm looking forward to the third one.
What about the ending of the second one? Was another cliffhanger?
Another cliffhanger. Okay. Another cliffhanger.
Cool.
They all die.
The Animus, and there's more puzzles. I mean, you can relive any memory of your ancestors. Imagine your first ancestors. Let's just hint at that. So,
oh wow, is that like part of the gameplay of the second one, or is that something that you think they're hinting towards for
there's
the third
something
one?
There's something you see when you put stuff together.
Okay,
so it's pretty cool.
Nice.
I definitely recommend to anyone who played the first one or kind of stopped because they didn't like the repetitive gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's some of the gripes besides the traveling that has been corrected? If people have been kind of turned off.
Is the repetitive gameplay?
Just repetitive.
Is the missions that were kind of basically the same thing? Like, you'd go to a town and you would assassinate a guy, but to assassinate him, you'd have to do A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm.
Each guy, you do A, B, and C. And there would always be a variation of what A, B, and C were, but there was only, like, maybe 4 or 5 things that you did that would reset. So it was kind of the same thing. This one, there's way more mission types, and the subtlety to the variance on them is really different.
Sounds good.
Okay, everyone, thanks for joining us. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at GeekTyrant, twitter.com/GeekTyrant. Also, be sure to leave your comments, rants, rude remarks in the rant section below. And be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed as well. We'll see you next week.